Carlos, and next presentation will be by Dr. Andrews, who will be talking about evidence-based introduction of new vaccines.
Thank you, Amara. Good afternoon. It's a pleasure to be here and actually a thrill to have this chance to tell you about PAHO's PROVAC initiative, which has as its mission to enhance national capacity to make evidence-based decisions for new vaccines. So I'd like to thank the organizers for that. If there's one thing I can leave you with this presentation, it's the following. We cannot accept the time lag between new life-saving vaccines become available in industrialized countries and when they become available in developing countries, where in most cases the disease burden is the greatest. It's an issue of equity and access. And to reverse that trend, two things must happen. First, which I'll be addressing in this presentation, is accelerating the policy process. And second, which you heard an excellent example given by Dr. Castillo, is accelerate the deployment process. And one opportunity to do that is actually eliminate a disease. What better way to create equity? What better way to use these technologies to their maximal benefit? But the vaccine introduction must be sustainable. We can ill afford to make a mistake today when the price of the vaccine is orders of magnitude more expensive. In the old days, we had vaccines that were pennies a dose that addressed an important public health problem. It was a no-brainer to accelerate deployment and take action required. But if we were to do that with more expensive vaccines, and they're available today but not available tomorrow because they're not sustainable in countries, we'll lose public confidence. And we need the evidence to make those decisions. And this relates to my final point, that we have to prioritize. The evidence needs to be there to prioritize vaccine introduction, but not only for new vaccines, but in the context of all health interventions. And so that's what I'll be addressing in the rest of my presentation. I have nothing to disclose. In the global context, WHO has a global immunization vision and strategy that uses the four tactics of disease reduction for rotavirus and pneumococcus, an approach to expanding the childhood immunization program, the traditional EPI program, into a family immunization program, so we're better prepared to introduce human papillomavirus vaccine or HIV vaccine when it becomes available, and reaching out to more partners that will continue to assure a safe and affordable supply of vaccines. And all these strategies or tactics are all pointed towards achieving the Millennium Development Goals. To digress a little bit, in the regional context, we heard from Dr. Castillo the success of the rubella and measles elimination campaigns. You know about the reduction in the blue line of the number of cases over time with the acceleration of strategies, and how the diminution of measles and improvement in surveillance led to uncovering the silent or secret disease of rubella, and we're well on our way to elimination. The point I want to make is I think we have the experience to reach all populations now, given that a rubella campaign targets in most countries all people less than 40 years of age, and that in most cases is about 50% of the population. So we have the commitment, we have a culture of prevention, I think, to make a difference with these new technologies, and we have the experience. Again, in the context of a regional perspective, looking forward, we have cervical cancer with these data showing age-specific mortality rates on the y-axis by subregion. And what I'd like to point out is the difference in between the orange line, which is the line that's flatter on the bottom, which represents North America, largely U.S. and Canada,
and the yellow and purple lines, which are the Caribbean and Central America. And those mortality rates in the Caribbean and Central America rank some of the highest in the world. So it's a regional priority and a sub-regional priority. So it's, again, how do we take advantage of these new technologies, and again, how do we reduce that time lag? So PROVAC has as its mission, I mentioned, enhancing the national capacity to make these decisions using local data. And there's a framework that we're promoting. The broad criteria that I've listed here come in three categories. There are technical criteria, programmatic criteria, and financial criteria. Technical criteria could be the characteristics of a vaccine. I'm going to show you an example. Programmatic criteria could be the infrastructure, the ability to train the health workers, the number of health workers. And the financial criteria have to do with the economic analyses. There are several factors among these groups of criteria that we believe are important at the end of the day to make a decision. Economic analyses do not function alone. They guide policymakers and have to be put in the context of all criteria. The first slide illustrates some of the technical criteria, and this slide is meant to show you pneumococcal coverage against what we know to be the serotype distribution for the regions of the world. And in the left top map, you see what a 7-valent vaccine would cover against what we know about the serotype distribution. And in particular, in Latin America, it would be 63% coverage with this 7-valent vaccine. So imagine being a policymaker. Do I introduce 7-valent vaccine today, or perhaps do I wait till 11-valent when it's available, where I can achieve 87% coverage against the disease burden in Latin America? So a difficult decision, particularly when we know that every hour, 2 children die due to invasive pneumococcal disease, and with the 7-valent vaccine, we could prevent at least one of those deaths. In addition, the knowledge of the vaccine production and the characteristics provide insight, other technical insight, and insight on how we communicate vaccination. This diagram summarizes how human papillomavirus vaccine-like particles are made. The first step is to isolate the DNA from the HPV and then clone a gene or open the reading frame encoding that L1 capsid protein that you see into a plasmid. The plasmid is then introduced into a eukaryote cell, usually a yeast cell, and then it is expressed, and through the messenger RNA transcription takes place to provide multiple capsid proteins, and the cell then lyses and the capsid proteins are expressed, and they then self-assembly into a structure that does not have DNA. And the point is, this is a very important message to convey. It will not cause cancer. It will not cause serious side effects that we know OPV does, and it's something that the public could benefit by this sort of knowledge. In terms of this next slide, a programmatic issue concerns the cold chain. This box is a single dose of rotavirus vaccine. It's about the size of the palm of my hand. Imagine being in a peripheral health center where there may be only one refrigerator, if that. And if you started loading your refrigerator with this vaccine, imagine what it would do to your space. Or imagine a nurse or a health assistant bicycling to an outlying clinic or village who has a vaccine carrier on the back of the bicycle. Do we have to have another nurse? Do we have to have another bicycle? And, you know, these are all issues that need to be considered in the planning, and that's what we're helping countries do so mistakes are avoided. Now, returning to rubella, Alan Himmon, who's here in the audience, Beryl Irons and others, did an economic study in the Caribbean showing that the elimination of rubella and congenital rubella syndrome would cost 7% of the treatment cost, the health system's cost to care and provide for these babies born with these defects. So in other words, investing $1 into a CRS elimination initiative would save you Mr. Minister or Mrs. Minister, $13. So it's cost savings. It's a no-brainer. But as we know, most interventions, public health interventions, are not cost savings, and so there are other issues to be considered and to prioritize using the information that we have available. Now, the PROVAC initiative, which started in 2004, and I'm pleased to say is now being funded by the Gates Foundation for the next 5 years. We're receiving a $5.3 million grant to continue this work, covering these five objectives: strengthen infrastructure and the process for developing decisions. This would be similar to what the U.S. does with the ACIP. Many countries have their technical committees, but are they functioning well? Are they there even? And in some cases, they're not. So this is a huge area of work. Develop the tools for economic analysis. I'll go into a little bit more detail in the next slide. Collect the data to populate those tools and do the economic studies. And it's focused on the economic studies because that's what the countries need. That's what they're asking for from us as technical supporters. And then advocate, put this evidence into a larger framework that I mentioned, and that we'll call decision cases, so that they can be distributed to the proper decision policy people and a decision can be made. And if the decision is to go forward, then continue to help countries develop their program plans of action that will ensure programmatic and financial sustainability. So this slide summarizes some of the work. On the left there, you see the tools for the economic analysis. I'd like to thank Martin Meltzer of CDC, who's helped us with the influenza tool, Rick Reingantz of Emory, who's helped us with the rotavirus tool, Anishua Sinhe from the NUMO ADIP, who's now at New Jersey Medical School, and Sue Goldie of Harvard on the HPV tool. And I think this process has contributed to the rapid acceleration of policy. You'll hear in the next presentation from Dr. Oliveira the update on rotavirus vaccine introduction. In addition, if you think before 2005, there were only 13 countries in Latin America and the Caribbean that were using seasonal influenza vaccination. Now, today, there are 36 countries. This slide, despite my effort to change the font, I'll get to the data at the bottom, but bear with me because the font is off and one of the columns is mislabeled. But the slide is intended to demonstrate the importance of considering affordability, that when we talk about cost effectiveness, it's important to couch it in terms of affordability. And cost effectiveness, as you know, is an attempt to define a value of an intervention. But affordability really looks at the actual budget implications, the dollars and cents that a minister of finance has in hand. And the example that I'd like to show you here that I think is excellent work from Dr. Goldie, the left column is the price per dose, and it ranges from $5 a dose to $19.50 a dose for the HPV vaccine. The middle column are the results of her analysis to prevent a daily according to those vaccine prices. And we know that vaccine price is the biggest driver, given the research that she's done. And then the final column on the right are data from the seven countries that she studied over the 5 years and the budgetary implications. So we're talking about multiple millions of dollars, if not more than a billion dollars, given those doses. What is exciting, I think, with regards to her work is that a vaccine price at $5 a dose against a illness that's in most developing countries is the highest cause of premature death in cancer of women, at $5 a dose, it would be cost savings. And so we're using this to negotiate with manufacturers to achieve affordable prices. So just to conclude very quickly, we're intending this work to continue to be very inclusive. If any of you are interested or think you have the experience and tools to work, I'm more than welcome to discuss opportunities. We have a number of partners, and in particular, CDC and the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation have been very supportive. And finally, just to summarize, that a key role that PAHO and its partners play is to build a strong national immunization program from which to bridge to new vaccines in order to achieve the Millennium Development Goals and other global disease reduction targets, with capacity development and sustainability as key guiding principles in this work. So I'd like to thank you, and thank again the organizers for inviting us.